Blog Talk Radio.
Kick it off here with a report out on police training and whether or not it's done properly, whether or not it explains a little bit of what's going on with all the killing of unarmed black people. So we'll start with that. As we move along here, we got some stuff on the TPP. We got Donald Trump sprinkled in the show today. Sarah Palin. On the show today. Good for her. The most press she's gotten in 2 years. I got Bill O'Reilly going head-to-head with the Donald himself. And Ann Coulter weighs in. Oh, my God. It's like a battle of the low IQs. So we'll discuss that. And later on in the show, we have an interesting study on racism, which we'll get to. And... oh, Creflo Dollar, man. Remember the guy, the pastor, who wanted to spend $17 trillion of the people in his congregation so that he could buy a private airplane? Yeah, he's back. He's defending it, and he's digging himself a deeper hole. Newsflash, when you're in a hole, stop digging. Okay, let's get started here, and we'll kick it off with the new police report. The Police Executive Research Forum released a new report this week on police abuse in America, and they reaffirmed something that many liberals have been saying for a long time now, which is that police training needs to change. So here's what they say. Quote, many recent controversial police shootings could have been avoided even though they may have been legally justifiable. Officers generally receive far too little training in de-escalating conflict and often are embedded in a culture that encourages them to rapidly resort to physical force. Disengagement and patience, the report found, are sometimes seen as antithetical to traditional police culture. So they go on to explain that if you're an officer and you have to call for backup, there's this thing in the back of your mind that's like, you're afraid the other officers are going to say, really? Really? You needed me for this? You didn't have control of it? Now, some of that is natural, I guess you could say. I mean, it's not outlandish to think that some people would feel that regardless of training. But training certainly feeds into it. So let's go ahead and take a look at the training, and we'll see how they divvy up their time. For everybody listening on the live show here, it says, there are 58 hours... dedicated to firearms training. Then we have 49 hours dedicated to defensive tactics. Constitutional law and legal issues is 40 hours. UOF, whatever that means, scenario-based training is 24 hours. Basic first aid is 16 hours. Communication skills is just 10 hours. UOF policy is 8. Again, I don't know what that means, admittedly ignorant. De-escalation, boom, 8 hours. Crisis intervention, 8 hours. Baton, 8 hours. ECW, I assume not the old Wrestling Federation, but nonetheless, ECW is 8 hours. And OC spray is 6 hours. So what that shows you is, putting aside the terms that I don't understand because I'm an idiot, what that shows you is firearms and defensive tactics are number one in the mind of the officers, and they're trained that way. So again, some of it you can say, hey, I blame just human nature and tribalism. And we know that exists. We know that's a real thing. You have the Stanford Prison Experiments that prove that once you give somebody a badge and an official uniform, they're going to think, aha, I'm above you. So that's part of it, no question. But this exacerbates the problem. I mean, if anything, you should counteract that tribalism instinct with the training and spend much more time on communication skills and de-escalation tactics. But they spend such a tiny amount of time on it that, you know, it's almost like we shouldn't even be surprised by the results. So in America, we have so many more police abuse situations, so many more police killings. I mean, there was a story, I don't know if it was in Sweden or Norway or Denmark or something like that, but the story broke like last year or so, and they said that police officers had, for the first time in the history of the country, killed somebody that year. What the fuck? That's insane! The first year that police in America killed somebody, I'm guessing, was 1776. This idea that you can have a country and have officers and the police are actually protecting and serving the people, it's like outlandish to Americans. And to many Americans in specific communities, particularly the African-American community, they feel like the cops are an occupying army. Because in many ways, they are. I mean, the Ferguson report, for example, proved that the law enforcement officials' job there is down on the population, shake them down for money so they can continue to fund the courts and fund the government buildings at the local level. And, you know, they harass people for nonviolent drug crimes and stuff like that. By the way, Michael A. Wood, the former Baltimore police officer, speaks about this as well. He said, at one time I was put in a white community to do, you know, standard policing and arrest people, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, after a while, you know, you can't arrest anybody. And you're also afraid that what if that guy's the son of the judge? What if that guy's the son of a business leader in the community? It's like they're not only are there two classes, they're super defined, sometimes along race lines, other times among income lines. But what he said is, what I would end up doing is I'd leave the white community because my bosses were harassing me that I haven't been arresting enough people. He said, I'd leave the white community and I'd go to the inner city, and I just, you know, shake somebody down, see if he has some weed on him, and arrest him. Well, you've set up a system that is bad by design. I mean, you've made it so that the police are no longer doing the job that they're supposed to be doing. Think of the fire department. If there's no fire, you know what they do? They play cards. They sit around. Don't get me wrong, they stay up to date on their training and all that stuff, but if there's no fire, they're not going to go start one and then go put it out. That wouldn't make sense. That'd be stupid. But when it comes to policing, we have this idea of like, well, you have to arrest X amount of people a month, and there's always going to be crime, so you always have to crack down on the criminals. And let's be clear here, it is criminal to smoke some weed and change your consciousness subtly. We should lock you up for that. All these things, it's over-policing, and then I haven't even brought up the over-militarization of police, which is a whole other problem. And then now, you know, the police training is fucked up, and it feeds into the problem. I mean, we need a top-down reboot of the way we do policing in America. We shouldn't rest until we do it. Step number one is change the training. On the political front, we should fight to end the drug war. We should fight to have body cameras on everybody. We should fight for community policing so people from a given community police their own community so they're more likely to view people as humans in that community. But bottom line is, we need a lot of change, and it should start right now. Okay. Isn't that crazy, man? 58 hours is firearms training, 49 hours is defensive tactics, just 10 and 8. 10 for communication skills and 8 for de-escalation. How are you supposed to know how to deal with people if you only get 8 hours of training in de-escalation and you're an officer? What the fuck is that about? Okay. All right, let's go to some economic stuff. David Pakman over at the David Pakman Show reported on an amazing story regarding the TPP that I actually missed. So this is really important. Let's listen.
The texts of TPP and its European counterpart, TTIP, have been made even more secret. The European Commission is making the TTIP deal even more secret by having put in place a new rule which says that politicians need to go to a secure reading room in Brussels, Belgium, to look at the text. A An investigation by German news site Corrective has revealed that the commission is cracking down on TTIP security after there were a bunch of leaks, supposedly by EU member states who had accessed information on the deal electronically. And it is not just TPP that is experiencing this. The U.S.-Asian equivalent, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, we've been talking about it for months, now is also using this super secure reading room idea. Robert Smith, who's host of the Planet Money podcast on NPR, said, quote, "In Washington, D.C., they love secrecy, but even by Washington standards, this amazed me. In the basement of the U.S. Capitol, there is a room, a locked, soundproof room. The only people allowed in the room are U.S. senators, and they can't bring in their assistants, they can't bring in their phones, they can't even take notes there. Inside the room is not the codes for our nuclear weapons, it's not CIA files, it's not the documents that tell us aliens landed in Roswell. No, in this room is the text of a trade deal." If corporations are not allowed to secretly meet to conspire against the public, price fixing being one example, why is it okay for elected officials? No democratically elected official should be voting on anything that the people they represent can't have full access to read and review and comment on unless there are specific national security reasons for secrecy. But we're just told, Lewis, that this is just a great trade deal that's going to be great for consumers and voters and everybody. If that's the case, shouldn't the constituents get a chance to read and opine and open?
Yeah. 100%. They're hiding it because it's bad for Americans and good for corporate interests. And the whole idea of a constitutional republic and a representative democracy is that we pay them and they take up our issues. So whatever we collectively want to do, as long as it doesn't violate the Constitution, they should be implementing our will, and of course they should be open about what they're doing. We're their bosses! The idea that somebody who's under you technically tells you, no, I'm not going to give you have full transparency and I'm not going to let you see what I'm doing. I'm your fucking boss. What are you talking about? I mean, that's a crazy thing to have in place. It's lunacy. And understand, guys, from the leaks that we already have, from WikiLeaks, actually, on the TPP, here's what we know. It's going to cost us thousands of jobs. Now, that's not only from WikiLeaks, that's also from a report from the Economic Policy Institute. We're going to reward Malaysia in this deal. For those of you who don't know, Malaysia has been under fire recently because they tolerate slave labor. So we're going to reward a country that does slave labor because we care so deeply about freedom and democracy. And, of course, it's going to reward Brunei, or Brunei, however you pronounce it. I apologize. People always correct me when I say it. My bad for still not knowing exactly how to say it. I think you could say it either way. But we're going to reward Brunei, and the problem with Brunei is, in 2014, they just implemented Sharia law. See, this is a point that, you know, it drives me fucking crazy that nobody else makes it, which is that we said we need to go do the war in Afghanistan, not only to get Al-Qaeda because the Taliban is, you know, holding Al-Qaeda, but we need to liberate the Afghani people because we don't want them living under, you know, Taliban-enforced Sharia law. So we went to war to stop Sharia law and to bring democracy to a region. And then just recently we're like, okay, Malaysia, you went in on this trade deal? You can make a lot of money if you do it. Yeah, but we just implemented Sharia law. Is it cool if we still get in? The government's like, oh, yeah, no problem. We got nothing against Sharia law. What are you talking about? We're friends with Saudi. Look at that. They do Sharia nonstop. We know, hey, as long as you guys like us, you get to do whatever the fuck you want, no matter how brutal and vicious to your own population. So the main takeaway from this story is that the government is not doing what you want it to do. A lot of people are like, duh. No, but the point is, it's totally corrupt. It's corrupt by design at this point. With all the money in the political system, you have legal bribery, and you have the multinational corporations and the billionaires that run the place to the point where the politicians are such puppets that if the corporations say, hey, I want to exploit slave labor in Malaysia, the politicians go, right on. Even the so-called liberal Democrats, because Obama was on this side as well. Like, oh, okay, don't look at the Malaysian slavery. How ironic, the first black president is like, slavery? If it's in Malaysia, whatevs, dude. I mean, think about how insane that is. Think about how deeply corrupt the system is when even the so-called liberals are like, as long as the slavery is happening overseas, hey, man, it's going to lead to possibly cheap underwear that I can buy at Costco. Or not Costco. They actually do a good job. Walmart. What the fuck? No. This is beyond ridiculous. And, of course, the final thing I'll mention on this is the TPP allows for corporations to sue for loss of, quote, expected future profits. That's insane. That's insane. So they can shake down governments for money that they think they should have made. It's like an unlimited Wall Street bailout scenario. You know how when the crash happened, it was largely the fault of Wall Street, and then many Wall Street companies went to the government and said, okay, now you bail me out. And the government was like, okay, you gave us campaign contributions, sure. This is like that built into the system. And also, it makes it so that some governments are now on equal legal footing to corporations. So instead of, let's say, just to pick on Walmart again, let's say Walmart goes into Malaysia, and Malaysia says, you know what, let's actually regulate them. Let's say no child labor, let's say you can't dump those chemicals in the river, yada, yada. Walmart, under the TPP, has a right to say to the Malaysian government, we disagree. Now, that's not the way governments are supposed to work. Of course it's supposed to be, when a law is passed, people and corporations and companies have to abide by it. The TPP makes it so that that's not the case. You know what would happen under the TPP? You would have to have the Malaysian government and the corporation go to an international tribunal, and the tribunal would decide who's right, whether or not this is burdensome regulations or not. So, in reality, what are you doing under the TPP? Taking away the sovereignty of governments all around the world. So you know how, you know, Alex Jones screams about, sovereignty, they're coming for your sovereignty. In this case, it happens to be true. In this case, now, it depends on which country you're talking about, because it's different for different countries under the deal. But overall, that is true, that you have to sacrifice sovereignty to an international tribunal. And who gets to pick the international tribunal? You ready for this? The corporations. So the corporations are going to tell governments, we disagree, and our corporate buddies who we pay just told us it's cool that we disagree, so none of your regulations count. So now we can do whatever the fuck we want. This really is a system of corporate fascism that we're setting up, which is why they have to do all this work in so much secrecy, because they know the more provisions get released, the more the American people are going to say, fuck no, not interested in that. Okay. Next. Do one more here, then we'll take a break. Let's go to Donald Trump and his comments on the minimum wage. Donald Trump went on Morning Joe and gave a long-winded response to a very simple question about whether or not we should raise the minimum wage.
Donald, I want to ask you about the American dream, your slogan of Make America Great Again. I'm curious on the issue of wages, which have been flat for years now. Could you give us some specifics on how you would address that issue? And do you think the minimum wage should be raised across the board?
So, Mick, it's such a nasty question because the answer has to be nasty. You know, we're in a global economy now. It used to be people would leave New York State and companies would leave New York State or leave another state and go to Florida, go to Texas, go to wherever they go because the wages, the, you know, all sorts of different things. Well, now it's not leaving New York or New Jersey or wherever they may be leaving. Now they're leaving the United States and they're going to other countries because they're competing for low taxes and they're competing for low wages and they're competing for all sorts of things. And, you know, one of the things that's happening is China, with what they're doing with their currency, with the devaluations, they're making it very, very difficult for companies to compete. So what's happening now is people are shopping. Companies are shopping. I see companies where they have international financiers, people that live in London. They're not even citizens of the United States. They're shopping their companies to different places. And we can't have a situation where our labor is so much more expensive than other countries that we can no longer compete. One of the things I'll do if I win, I'm going to make us so competitive as a country But we are no longer competing against one state against the other. We're competing, it's the United States against other places. We're Joe, where the taxes are lower, where the wages are lower, where lots of things are lower. Now, I want to create jobs so that you don't have to worry about the minimum wage. You're doing a great job, but they're making much more than the minimum wage. But I think having a low minimum wage is not a bad thing for this country, Mika.
Of course it is. It's just not a bad thing for you because you're rich. No, I kind of can't stand his answer. Well, that should go without saying, but it pisses me off on a whole nother level. Now, we're used to seeing Donald Trump, believe it or not, say the right things when it comes to lobbyists and money in politics. We've done 3 or 4 segments where he's like, I'm not going to listen to the lobbyists because I'm already rich. Fuck them. The system is broken. All the politicians do is listen to the lobbyists. They're bought. They're corporate whores. So he's right about all that stuff. But the reason why I still say, and all you guys still say, I'd never vote for the guy, is because outside of that, he's wrong about everything. And here's a perfect example. What are you going to do? You're going to take money out of politics so you can continue to not listen to the American people with your shitty ideas. What happened, man? I thought you were, you know, speaking for the people. You pretend like, oh, yeah, I'm the billionaire guy, but I'm a leader, and I tell it like it is, and I'm looking out for Americans. We need to make America great again by paying them less. Pay the minimum wage workers less. That's the problem with what you're saying, man, is that, what is it, over 80% of the American people want to raise the minimum wage, and you're like, ah, fuck that. It's not a bad thing that we have a low minimum wage. Who says that? How ridiculous is that? Now, understand, what he's describing there is actually not wrong. What he's giving you is the businessman's perspective. And that perspective is, well, I can pay, you know, somebody in Iowa $7.25 an hour to make my widgets, or I can ship it to Cambodia and pay somebody 37 cents to make it. What are you going to do if you're a businessman? You don't have a choice. Of course you're going to... I mean, your whole purpose in existence, your corporation, is trying to make a profit. That's the whole point. That's the way the system is created. So what are you going to do? Of course you're going to send production to Cambodia, and you're going to pocket the rest of the money. I mean, it's economics 101. But see, that's where government comes in, and that's where government needs to set proper rules to make sure that the American people don't get screwed over, along with poor kids in Cambodia getting screwed over, and they're making only 37 cents. And they still can't even afford to live. And by the way, $7.25 here, you can't live on that either, so that's also a problem. So how do you solve that? Well, here's how you solve that. Not only do you raise the minimum wage, you also, to a living wage, to be clear, you also punish corporations via fines and taxes that outsource jobs. Very simple. So you make it so that the businesses are incentivized to set up shop here in America. You make it so that their choices are pay $15 an hour to somebody here to make your widgets, or if you send it overseas, sure, you may pay the kid in Cambodia 37 cents, but when you ship your goods back into the country where you want to sell them, well, we're going to add a tax on top of that of $15. So now it costs you $15.37 an hour for the Cambodian kid to make it. So what are you going to do? You're going to say, well, I'm going to pay the American because I'll actually save money if I pay the American, and it'll be made in America, and our economy here will get better. You know what this is called, guys? It's called protectionism. I'm one of 7 people left in America who openly advocates for protectionism. The opposite of protectionism is what they call free trade. In reality, it's just outsourcing all American jobs. It used to be the case that when you imported foreign goods, there would be what's called a tariff on it. Now, again, a tariff makes it so that the imported goods are more expensive than the goods made in America. So that would then do what? Incentivize the American people to buy American, and then that would keep jobs in America, and then that would make it so your neighbor can have a middle-class living. But if you get rid of protectionism and you do so-called free trade, it's a race to the bottom. Now people aren't buying American anymore, and the cost of labor is going down, and people are living in poverty more here, and at the same time that's going on, it's not like the person in Cambodia is living much better. They went from making, what, 35 cents an hour beforehand at some other place to 37 cents an hour with an American corporation barking at them all day long. It's not like they're doing better. So who wins in that scenario? Just the businessman. That's it. Just the corporation. That's it. So just Donald Trump wins. That's why he's talking about this problem from this perspective. He's not lying to you. He's being honest. He's saying, from my perspective, from a businessman's perspective, of course what you want to do is keep the minimum wage low in America or not have a minimum wage here in America. And he says that way we can be competitive with places like Mexico and Cambodia and Bangladesh. But we don't want to drive wages down to be, quote, competitive. We want to have good wages and be competitive. And the way you do that is you punish corporations that outsource jobs. We used to do it. We don't do it anymore because today the corporations have bought the politicians. So the politicians do what the corporations want, even if it hurts the American people, and we know it does. And under Donald Trump's idea, it would hurt the American people even more. So you can stop saying, I want to make America great again, because if you're not interested in raising the minimum wage to a living wage, you don't want to make America great again. You want to make America more poor. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, we got Sarah Palin, we got Bill O'Reilly, we got Ben Carson, good googly moogly, and we got Mike Huckabee all the way in Israel. Fundraising from terrorists. Yeah, I said it. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
We're back.
back. There are very few people who could sing a song about fucking in public and have women still love it. Usher, hats off to you, buddy. What an amazing talent that is. And there's very few people who can piss on a 14-year-old and have everybody go, "Ah, good music, though." R. Kelly? That's fucked up, dude. All right, let's go to Sarah Palin here and gleefully destroy her. How's that sound? Sarah Palin gave a language-mangling interview to Greta Van Susteren on Fox News. She spoke about how awesome Trump is on the issue of immigration. Let's watch.
Immigration policy and these common sense plans of his that most Americans, I believe, have been thinking, just not being able to say because we don't have a microphone like he does. The immigration plan of his, especially the wall, that's common sense. It's a real shot in the arm to constitutionalists and conservatives who want America to be put first by our leaders. And really, it's a shot across the bow to the other candidates because now they're going to have to explain why can't build a wall, even though we've been saying it for years there in the political classes in D.C. We've been promising people a wall. Now they're going to have to explain to people why they don't support the policies that Mr. Trump has come out with. People who are born here in the United States, do you support Donald Trump that they should not be assigned or not be allowed to be citizens, or do you disagree? Well, see, and the argument about it's for the children will be used over and over again to kind of portray probably all Republicans as being heartless, and nothing could be further from the truth. You know, a plank in our platform is pro-family, and a family is a unit. And I believe what Mr. Trump and probably the other Republican candidates, once they do come out with some kind of policy proposals, what they're saying is, yeah, a family is a unit, and if their parents broke the law, and if they're here illegally, well, they need to get back in line, and because family is a unit, Greta, the family sticks together, and the kids have to get in line with their mom and dad.
She says, wait, come on, the left is going to paint us as heartless. We're not heartless. What we want to do is deport all 11 million undocumented immigrants. That would prove the point of the left. The left is saying you're heartless because you want to deport 11-plus million undocumented immigrants. And you're like, that's right. You can't call me heartless that I want to do that, but I do want to do that. But that is heartless. No, what you don't understand is that such a gigantic percentage of that 11 million, they've been here for a long time. They have lives here. And then I love this hypocrisy. She starts off, and she mentions at one point, you know, Donald Trump, he's a shot in the arm to us constitutionalists. We love it. And then after she finishes bragging about how much her and her buddies love the Constitution, she immediately comes out against birthright citizenship, even though in the Constitution, it has birthright citizenship. Oh, my God, it's amazing. I don't know how she didn't catch that hypocrisy. Well, she probably doesn't know it's in the Constitution. But I actually want to give you the wording. 14th Amendment, first sentence. The first sentence of Section 1. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. I love the Constitution, except when I don't. When I don't love it, I'll just ignore it. No, but what's stunning is that the contradiction came within minutes of each other. So there was some stuff in between there. I had to splice it for time reasons. But that was in the same interview. She contradicts herself brazenly. And, of course, Greta Van Susteren, being fantastic at her job, she called out Sarah Palin on that hypocrisy, right? No, didn't happen. If you didn't know, that's what that noise meant. No. All right, but there's still other levels of hypocrisy that I want to get to real quick. She says, well, we are the ones that are pro-family values. Yeah, Sarah, unless they're gays, then you don't want more families. And unless you want to send sons and daughters to unnecessary offensive wars against countries that didn't attack us, then not so pro-family. And unless you want to kick out entire families. I mean, there are some people that are searching for political asylum. Are you against political asylum, too? If you want to kick out all 11 million undocumented immigrants, I guess you are. So you're so pro-family that you want to take somebody, a family in the U.S., and send them back to El Salvador or Guatemala in the middle of a fucking drug war. Yeah, that's how pro-family you are. You're so pro-family that you want the entire family to die together in gang violence. Thank you, Sarah Palin. And finally here, this is the woman who all the time talks about Christian values, Christianity, Christianity, Jesus, 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 Jesus. If Jesus was back, I would tickle his sack and jerk him off. But they love Jesus and Christianity, again, except when they don't. Because one of the issues in the Bible that there actually isn't a contradiction. On the overwhelming majority of issues, you can find both sides in the Bible. Wildly contradictory book. But there are a few issues where there's really not a contradiction. One of them, of course, is the rich. The Bible, or Jesus specifically, hates the rich, says they just can't get into heaven, period. But the other one is immigration. The Bible is the single most liberal book on immigration I've ever seen. In fact, we've gone through, what, 5, 6 different passages on the show? They talk about how you need to treat the sojourner, so in other words, the stranger or the traveler or the immigrant in your lands, you need to treat them just as good as your family and just as good as, you know, your neighbor. You have to treat them with the utmost respect. One of the passages said, because you don't know what they went through, they're entertaining demons unaware. So in other words, you don't know what the fuck they've gone through. They might have went through hell to get there, and it's your duty as a Christian to treat them well, treat them with respect, and do the right thing like Jesus would do. But she's going to scream about Jesus and yelp about Jesus, and then when it comes time to actually implement the principles that he wanted on the front of immigration, she's like, who is this guy, Jesus? I never heard of him before. Okay. All right, now we get to the heavyweight fight, son. You know what that means, right? Bill O'Reilly versus Donald Trump. Yabba dabba dipshits. That's what this is. Oh my God, I just came up with a brilliant fucking ridiculous phrase. I'll be using that now more often. Let me write that down. Yabba dabba dipshits, was it? Yeah, I think so. All right, we'll go with that anyway. All right. See if I can squeeze that into this story somewhere. So Bill O'Reilly had his buddy Donald Trump on the show 2 nights ago. And when I say his buddy, I mean his buddy. They actually go to basketball games together. It's cute. They hold hands. They make out with a poster of Reagan later on in the night. And believe it or not, they actually got into a heated debate on the issue of immigration. So Trump recently said that we should kick out all undocumented immigrants. And he said he even disagrees with birthright citizenship. So in Trump's crazy mind, it makes sense not only to kick out all 11 million undocumented immigrants, but you also kick out the people who are American citizens, who were born in the U.S., but their parents aren't immigrants. He's like, yeah, get rid of them too. That's such lunacy that I've never even heard it before, and I've been following politics for a very long time. He's now staked a position to the right of the furthest right-wing position ever. We've come a long way from Ronald Reagan, who, you know, said, oh, I'm a conservative, but he granted amnesty. Here you have Donald Trump. He's like, no amnesty. Get rid of all 11 million and their kids. Oh, God. Okay. So craziness. So Bill O'Reilly himself apparently had a somewhat human response to this, and he was like, dude, that's way too far. And O'Reilly's main point wasn't even just that it's too far, because I'm sure that the sentiment behind it O'Reilly kind of likes. But O'Reilly's point was, it's not even possible to round up 11 million people. Like, the optics of that are horrendous. It's like Nazi Germany optics, where, like, that you bust in the door. The way Bill O'Reilly phrased it, by the way, is you bust in the door of the barrios and just drag families out. He's like, the optics are bad. It's not really possible. And then on top of that, birthright citizenship is in the Constitution. So O'Reilly says that. You know how Trump responds? He's like, I disagree. You disagree? What do you mean you disagree? What do you disagree with? He's just telling you what's in the Constitution. Like, you know. You know, there are lawyers, Bill, lawyers exist, and some lawyers might say, yeah, you know what, Bill O'Reilly's right, but I got lawyers that say Donald Trump's right, and we could take it to court. In fact, we're going to take it to court. And Bill is like, he's so flabbergasted, Bill O'Reilly actually didn't come back with a classic Bill O'Reilly response, which is like, shout at you in at triple the decibel level you've been using, and then cower you into a corner. Now, again, they're friends, so I don't think he'd do that either way. But even he was taken aback, and he's like, okay, I can quote the Constitution for you if you'd like. I know what it says. So, cut to, they wrap up their conversation, of course not coming to an agreement. Ann Coulter was apparently on a plane, and her Twitter feed was blowing up with other right-wing idiots telling her, oh, Bill O'Reilly, the liberal, oh, liberal Bill O'Reilly, liberal. Goddamn liberal! Oh, NASCAR's great. And Ann Coulter's like, let me see what happened here, guys. So here's what she said on Twitter. Just got off a plane and my email feed is exploding with denunciations of Bill O'Reilly for interview with Donald Trump on The Factor. And then she says, sorry for the delay. And then she quotes O'Reilly, or roughly quotes him what he said on the show. O'Reilly, quote, you want me to quote you the Constitution? If you're born here, you're an American. Period. Period. Hashtag, good God, he's stupid. Come again, son? Let me get this right. You're a right-wing media figure. You're a right-wing pundit. And you just said Bill O'Reilly. You said, quote, good God, he's stupid, talking about Bill O'Reilly. Okay, Ann, let me get something through your skinny little head, bitch. All right? Bill O'Reilly, like him or dislike him, clearly you dislike him. He's number one in your shitty little field, okay? Sean Hannity gets much worse ratings than Bill O'Reilly does. Bill O'Reilly's number one in all cable news. Now, again, I disagree with the guy, and the overwhelming majority of the people that watch his show are 96 years old. Actually, that's not far off from the truth. The average age is really like 71. But he's number one by a mile and a half. His audience pisses on your little audience. I mean, you write books. You know what conservatives don't like to do? Read. This idea of, well, oh, Ann Coulter, yeah, oh, she has a bigger following than Bill O'Reilly. My ass she does now. There's some internal office politics going on here, too. You want to know why? Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity don't like each other. This is something that we knew from a while back, but the Fox News mole also recently spoke about this, the guy who was in there and then let out all the dirt on what's happening there. They don't like each other. In fact, they hate each other. Hannity and O'Reilly are not friends. Ann Coulter's always on Hannity's show, because they're even further to the right of Bill O'Reilly. They're way out there in Narnia land, Voodooville, make no sense all the timeville, right? So they hate O'Reilly, and Ann Coulter does not hesitate for a second to say to Bill, you're stupid. Oh, I am waiting. I'm going to buckle up, and I cannot wait to see Bill O'Reilly's response. Oh, my God, it's going to be political heaven to watch these two yabba-dabba dipshits go back and forth. Okay, and finally, I'll leave you with this, because this is very important. So they're having a debate about a factual matter. Does the Constitution say, or does it not say, that birthright citizenship is real, that it's in the Constitution? Again, I'll quote you, Ann Coulter. She quoted him when he said that and said, quote, hashtag, God, good God, he's stupid. So he's stupid for saying the Constitution has birthright citizenship in it. 14th Amendment, Section 1. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Now, Bill O'Reilly, in many ways, is stupid. On the majority of issues, his position, I should say, is stupid. So there's a million and one areas where you can call him somewhat stupid. Ann Coulter managed to pick the one area where Bill O'Reilly mentioned a fact. Well, there you have the ultra-far right wing in a nutshell. They're so fucking extreme that Bill O'Reilly isn't far enough right for them, and their best example of him being, quote, stupid is when he says something that's factual. Now you guys see why my job is so easy. Okay, next. I got it in there, man. Yabba dabba dipshits. Can we get a hashtag going? Somebody hashtag that and send it at me. I'm going to retweet the fuck out of that. I'm liking this new one.
Okay.
Who says that? All right, sorry. I'm getting caught up on my own silly words. Yabba dabba dipshits. All right. How much time I got left before the next break? Eh, a little bit. We could work with something here. We'll do one more. And let's go to Ben Carson. Ben Carson is doing some campaign stops in the Southwest near the Mexican border. And apparently at an event, he advocated for an immigration policy that's even more insane than Donald Trump. Listen.
It was a big change for this presidential candidate from yesterday, where he seemed kind of moderate when it came to immigration and whatnot. And at one point, he seemed to indicate that he was open to the use of military drone strikes right here on U.S. soil in an attempt to try to stop all this drug activity. And I want to give you a sound of what he had to say when I asked him about this after his briefing today, when he said that he's got to be open to all sorts of different possibilities. Here, take a listen.
Drone strikes on American soil seem a little over the top, even to entertainment.
Sure. You can entertain all kinds of things, but here's the take-home point. Take-home point is that we have excellent military leaders, and we need to employ their expertise because this is a war that we are fighting.
Do you understand what he just said? The conversation was about immigration. He's like, yeah, we have excellent military people. We should let them do what they got to do. At the event earlier in the day, he implied that we should do drone strikes on immigrants on American soil. No, I've said it 30 times on the show before, but I'm going to say it again, and I'm going to keep saying it. This is the dumbest smart guy in human history. Remember, he's a neurosurgeon. I'm at the point now where I wouldn't even want him to do my neurosurgery if I ever needed it. Now, I know that's not right because he has done a fantastic job in that field, but who says something like that? That's insanity. You can't even do that. You're not allowed to do that. You know why we have police officers, for example? Police officers are the people who are supposed to deal with, you know, crime that happens within our borders. You don't deploy the military on U.S. Are you going to declare martial law because we have some immigrants that come into the country? And again, the conversation was about immigration. And he's like, eh, drug wars, gang, something, drone strike people on American soil. What are you saying? Are you implying that all immigrants are in one way or another involved with the drug trade? No, usually the people who are coming to the United States and crossing the southern border, nowadays they're coming from usually El Salvador or Guatemala or somewhere south of Mexico, and they come up through Mexico to escape the drug violence and the gangs. So they're coming here because they want nothing to do with that. They want a better life. They want to get a job and raise their kids and have some level of material well-being. And he wants to drone them. Understand, guys, just how extreme this is. We just covered the story about Donald Trump. Donald Trump's plan was kick out all 11 million undocumented immigrants from America. The economy would collapse. That's not even possible to do logistically, but his idea is kick them all out. And then, on top of that, also kick out the kids of them. Now, they're American citizens because we have birthright citizenship in the Constitution. But he's like, I don't care. Get rid of them. So you want to get rid of more than just all the undocumented immigrants. You want to get rid of legal immigrants, too. And they're not even immigrants. They're just citizens. You want to deport citizens. You know what's happening here, right? These guys, all the other Republicans, are looking at the polls, and Donald Trump is beating them by a country fucking mile. So what are they saying? We got to outdo him somehow. How is he doing so well in the polls? Well, he's a douchebag. He's got a meerkat on his head, and he's super confident. And he's super right-wing. I guess I got to out-right-wing him. So look at what he's doing. Oh, yeah? You want to deport all 11 million undocumented immigrants plus American citizens? Watch this. I want to drone strike immigrants on American soil. So you want to declare war on America. And by the way, how long until they start saying, you know, we shouldn't just drone the undocumented immigrants? maybe the kids of the undocumented immigrants who are American citizens. So drone American citizens on American soil. Again, he was asked about immigration, and his response was, we have a great military. We should let them do what they got to do. These people, we need to come up with a new term. The term fascism, tyranny, dictatorship, authoritarian, that ain't strong enough, son. And it's not even like they had these positions and they want to do it in secret and they're embarrassed about how undemocratic and ridiculous they are. He's bragging about it. Yeah, drone people on American soil. That's my immigration plan. Urgh, I'm so strong. Will you guys vote for me yet? Do I need to put a ferret on my head, too, to copy Donald Trump? Will that make me more popular? I'll do it if you guys say the word. Oh, what is this world coming to? I don't know how anybody can vote Republican, man. If you vote Republican, sweet baby Jeebus, what the fuck is wrong with you? All right. How much time? Maybe I can squeeze in one more here. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. All right, we'll do one more. Mike Huckabee. Gonna bring it down here. Bring the mood down here for a second. Mike Huckabee, when he was in Israel, decided it would be a brilliant idea to do a fundraiser on an illegal settlement in occupied Palestinian territory. These guys are incredible. Each one outdoes the other one. Again, we just did the story about how Donald Trump's immigration plan is deport all 11 million undocumented immigrants and then some, even legal citizens who were born in this country to undocumented immigrants, deport them too. And then Ben Carson's like, let's do drone strikes on undocumented immigrants in America. And now this idiot's like, I'm going to go fundraise from terrorists. From terrorists. Newsweek reports on this. They say, an Israeli settlement watchdog has condemned the move as absurd, as the outpost is considered illegitimate by the United States government and illegal under international law. Anti-settlement group Peace Now, by the way, you're undoubtedly going to hear that right-wingers say, that group is a terrorist group. They're for war. Their name is fucking Peace Now. He's the one that met with the terrorists, the people who stole land, and they're like, mine, to steal a term from Carbon, man. So don't get it twisted, they're going to lie, but they're wrong. So anti-settlement group Peace Now slammed Huckabee's trip to the illegal settlement, saying it is a clear signal that the former Arkansas governor is against the end of Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territory and the creation of a viable solution for both Palestinians and Israelis. Yeah, he's not even trying to hide it. He's wearing it on his sleeve. And what I'm stunned by is that in his mind, he actually believes this is like mainstream. Think about what he's doing here. And remember, we did a segment not that long ago, which was a clip of him, I believe, back from 08. It resurfaced. It was him while in Israel talking about how there is no such thing as a Palestinian. They don't exist. That's so stupid, I don't even know how to respond to it. What does that mean? Well, there was never technically a Palestinian state, but even going back to the Roman Empire days, they referred to that land as Palestine, and the people that lived on that land say, I am Palestinian. What do you mean they don't exist? What are you going to do, just walk up to someone and say, what are you? Oh, I'm a Palestinian. Poof, magic, gone. My buddy Jesus just did some voodoo on you, and poof, gone, and then he walked on water. No, but Mike, that's not true. See, this is why I can't stand ultra-far right-wingers. They just tried to mold reality to be whatever the fuck they want it to be. So he's 100% on the side of Israel and the ultra-far right in Israel, so he'll just twist facts, make shit up to make it seem like all this land should be Israeli land, and that is what he believes. Let's be clear here. He thinks, and a lot of this is because of not just because of money from Israel for his campaign, but because of biblical prophecy, he thinks, you have to get rid of all the Palestinians, the entire area needs to be Israel, and then that sets it up so Jesus can fly down bodily like this and take Mike Huckabee up to heaven with him where they can go bowling with Elvis and Marilyn Monroe. And what else does he do when he's there, by the way? Oh, that's right, kills the overwhelming majority of the Jews. So Mike Huckabee's love for Israel is so deep that he can't wait to see the majority of them die, and then he can go hang out with Jesus. He's just a bad guy, and let's face it, these are terrorists. I don't understand why some people are hesitant to call it what it is. The reality is, what's the definition of terrorism? People who do violence for a political reason or a political goal or a political ends. That's exactly what's happening here. If somebody comes into your house and they say, okay, mine now, get the fuck out, and they point a gun at your head, and they kick you out, and as you're going out the door, they say, by the way, I'm taking this because it's part of my country now, it's part of my state now, and it's because my religion is better than your religion, and we deserve all this land, and if you go to the neighbor's house, I'm going to kick you out from there too for the same reason, because this is all part of my country, my land, and my religion, which is all better than yours, so move the fuck along. If somebody does that, that is terrorism. That's absolutely terrorism. So make no mistake about it, and everybody should refer to it this way. Mike Huckabee just raised money, campaign funds, from terrorists. Do I need to repeat myself? And remember, we just did the story about how it was Israeli settlers who firebombed Palestinian homes, two of them, in the middle of the night. Thank God nobody was in one of the houses. But in the other one, you know what happened, right? A one-year-old baby was burned alive, and somebody else in the family died as well, and on top of that, there were injuries. And that's just one of thousands of settler terrorist attacks on Palestinians going back over the past decade. No, what they're doing here is mission creep. It is slowly but surely annexing more land and more land and kicking the Palestinians off more and more and more until however many years down the road they start looking around and they go, oh, what happened? It turns out all the land is ours now because we've been slowly stealing it for the past 40 years. And then at that time, what'll happen? You know, you'll have people go, well, I guess we're at some level of peace now, right? I mean, we killed almost everybody on the other side and we kicked them all off the land and now they live in misery in a tiny little area with no hope for the future. Oh, I guess we don't even need a two-state solution anymore because we have all the land now. You have to oppose Mike Huckabee on this. You have to oppose the settlers. And you know it's bad. When even the Israeli government and the U.S. government, who are no friends to the Palestinians, are like, dude, what are you doing, man? You're going too far. This is the equivalent of some liberal politician going directly to Hamas to raise money from them. That's exactly what this is like. So we're dealing with somebody here who has totally sold out, not just to the Israel lobby, but to all of his donors, and he is raising money from terrorists, make no mistake about it. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, we have a radio host that's going to advocate the craziest thing you've ever heard in your life, and an evangelical Christian pastor brings up Robin Williams, and the world explodes in anger, rightfully so. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Sun comes up, baby, I just wanna take it. Now here we are, driving around town, contemplating where I'm gonna lay it down. Girl, you got me saying, my, wish that I pull over and keep this thing starting right to go. I wanna do something freaky to you, baby. I don't think they heard me. Like show to see. Every time that you roll with me, you're holding me, trying to keep control of me, nice and slow. You know, never letting go, never messing up the flow. It's out of hook, go, go.
Let me take you to a place nice and quiet. There ain't no one better into it. Ain't got a rush. I just wanna take it nice and slow.
Now, baby, tell me what you wanna do with me.
See, I've been waiting for this for so long. Making love until the sun comes up.
Baby,
I just wanna take it nice and slow. Now tell me,
do you wanna get free?
Cause I'll fuck you right, I will. I'll fuck you right, I will.
Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys. I'm loving the hashtag Yabba Dabba Dipshits. How awesome would it be if the show was big enough where we could get that trending worldwide? Not even just in the U.S. Worldwide hashtag Yabba Dabba Dipshit. What would be funny is that like 99% of the people doing it would have no idea why they're doing it or what the origin was. You think you've heard crazy so far on the show today? It's gonna get worse! Oh god, okay. Iowa radio host and apparently legendary idiot, Jan Mikkelsen, who's a man, by the way, I'll let you make your own judgment on that name for a dude, he did a segment on illegal immigration this week, and what he's going to call for here is so over the line that he makes other people in the far right look like Noam Chomsky.
Now, here's what would work. And I was asked by an immigration open borders activist a couple of weeks ago how I would get all of the illegals here in the state of Iowa to leave. So you're going to call the police every time you find an illegal, or you're going to round them up and put them in detention centers? And I said, no, you don't have to do any of that stuff. Well, are you going to invite them to leave the country and leave Iowa? I said, well, sort of. Well, how are you going to do it, Mikkelsen? You think you're so smart. How would you get thousands of illegals to leave Iowa? Well, I said, well, if I wanted to do that, I'd just put up some signs. Well, what would the signs say? Well, I said, well, I'd put them on the end of the highway on western part of the interstate system, and I put them on the eastern side of the state, right there in the interstate system, and in the north on the Minnesota border, and on the in south Kansas and Missouri border. And I would just say this: as of this date, whenever we decide to do this, as of this date, 30, maybe this is a totally arbitrary number, 30 to 60 days from now, anyone who is in the state of Iowa that is not here legally and cannot demonstrate their legal status to the satisfaction of the local and state authorities here in the state of Iowa, become property of the state of Iowa. So if you are here without our permission, and we've given you 2 months to leave, and you're still here, and we find that you're still here after we've given you the deadline to leave, then you become the property of the state of Iowa. And we have a job for you, and we start using compelled labor, the people who are here illegally, would therefore be owned by the state and become an asset of the state rather than a liability, and we start inventing jobs for them to do.
He just advocated for slavery. And he's so dumb, he might not even realize that he just advocated for slavery. Oh my God, man, it's like right before that segment happened, his producer walked up to him and he's like, having a little snack. He's like, oh God, I just realized I've been eating an idiot sandwich. And then the next segment was just drooling and vomiting with idiocy. Okay, I'm going to try to make this as clear as possible for everybody listening. Not that you guys don't already know this, you do. But speaking specifically to his audience here, not that any of them would necessarily watch my show, but who knows, maybe they stumble across it because of the name and the title, let's say. All right, you're a bad person. I don't know how else to say it, because here's the reality. Presumably, in his mind, he's thinking, well, the illegals, as he calls them, illegal immigrants come into the country, come into our state, and they're so bad, and they're so wrong, and what they did is such a crime, being illegal in my country, breaking the law. That's such a crime that I'm going to counter that by enslaving them. But look at the giant fallacy that's part of that. Isn't enslaving them a worse crime? Regardless of what you think of them coming in or not, and it's fine to have the opinion that, hey, I don't think they should come in because it is against the law and they should go to the back of the line, yada, yada, all the stuff that the conservatives usually say on this issue. Even if I grant you all of that, isn't it a significantly worse crime for you to enslave them? You're advocating for slavery. And then let's also not let this irony slip here. The fact that we all know if there was some horrible natural disaster or something that happened in the U.S., let's say the super volcano explodes and fucking 70% of the U.S. is uninhabitable, and this guy escapes from Iowa and he has to go to, you know, Canada or some shit, let's say, just to survive. And when he gets there, there are people that think like he does now in Canada. And they're like, well, we didn't really say you can come in here. This is illegal. You're an illegal. That's what you are. You're an illegal immigrant. And, I mean, look, we'll give you 2 months to leave and go back to the hellhole south of us. But if you don't, we're going to enslave you. How would he react? You know what his response would be? You guys are barbarians. You guys are savages. You guys quite literally are dehumanizing me. You're saying I'm property. I'm not a person. That's exactly what he's doing to undocumented immigrants here. And that makes you bad people. How heartless are you? How bad are you? How wrong are you? And then, of course, he would say, Christian values. Jesus. Follow the example of Jesus. Be open-minded and open-hearted and treat me right in your land. But notice, when it's people who are brown-skinned who come here, he's like, I don't know, man. We might want to enslave these people because we're so moral and they're so immoral. Again, it's amazing that he doesn't see the hypocrisy there. He doesn't see the irony there. And remember, a lot of the people who are coming into the U.S. through the southern border are coming from Guatemala, El Salvador, and places south of Mexico. And they're coming here specifically to escape drug violence and gang violence. And they're trying to create a better life. So this idea that they are immoral and they are evil, they're escaping what they view as the immorality and the evil actions of that country. And let's remember, some of those countries have a higher violence rate than Iraq did during the height of the Iraq War. That's how devastating the drug war has been for South America. And a lot of that, let's face it, is fueled by us because since we banned drugs, since we've done the war on drugs, we've given a monopoly to the cartels, which allows violence to thrive in Mexico and South America. If you legalize, tax, and regulate, then we can grow our own drugs here, essentially, and we can take away the power from the cartels and beat them through competition. But, of course, this guy would probably oppose that kind of policy, too. So here's the bottom line. Don't come talking to me about how much you love Jesus and how Christian you are, because you just advocated for making people slaves. Don't talk to me about family values, because you just advocated making mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters slaves, saying you're not human, you're property now. And don't talk to me about your pro-life position, because you want to take away the freedom and the lives of these people and make them slaves. And also, don't talk to me about how much you love freedom and love democracy, because what you mean is, I love it for me, I hate it for you. I hate it if you have darker skin than I do. The immigrants do very hard work, and the U.S. would collapse without them. Like I said, all 11 million here, I would give amnesty to. I get protecting the border after you do that, and having a system set up where we only allow in the people we want to allow in and all that stuff, I understand all that. But if you took the 11 million we have now and kicked them all out, the economy would collapse. And in fact, we know that because there was a great Vice report recently, I think it was in Alabama, where some areas did that. And you know what happened? They wanted the immigrants back immediately. They were like, oh goodness, the economy is going to collapse without them. Nobody else is doing the work. And when they do it, they don't do it effectively enough. And our profit margins are falling and we're fucked. So bottom line, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And he is the height of immorality, as he claims like he is the most moral. This guy, he's such a good person that he wants to enslave you. Again, I want everybody to understand. In that guy's mind, he thinks he's the moral one. Isn't that amazing? In his mind, he's like, I'm the one who is standing up for the proper values. I'm the one who cares about civilization, man, and all that stuff. No, you don't. You're a prick, and you're the bad guy. Okay. Speaking of racism, according to a study by the University of Southampton and the Institute for the Study of Labor in Germany, Americans with black-sounding names are less likely to receive information when requested from local public services like sheriff's offices, libraries, and school districts, and they're less likely to be treated cordially when they do. So let me give you some information on this. They say, quote, the researchers used a well-established method known as a correspondence study in which they chose four names, two that, based on previous research, distinctly sounded like they belonged to white people and two that sounded like they belonged to black people. They sent identical emails seeking basic access information, like what time offices open and documents needed to enroll in school. Emails sent by white-sounding names received responses 72% of the time, while those sent by black-sounding names got responses 68% of the time, a four-point difference, the researchers report. They continue, in the responses, there was a difference in tone as well. While all four names identified themselves as real estate agents, the white-sounding ones were more likely to be addressed with a polite salutation. The difference was the most marked with sheriff's offices, with a 7% gap, and least noticeable with county clerks and job centers. Discrimination was more likely in rural areas than urban ones. White employees were more likely to ignore emails from senders with black-sounding names than black employees. And by the way, they say that black workers were more likely to respond kindly to the emails with black names, presumably because they realize, oh, yes, these are human beings, too. I know I'm a human being. This is also a human being. Now, I got to be honest, based on this study alone, I don't take much away from this study alone. And the reason I say that is it's a 4 percentage point difference, and they don't say what the margin of error is, but I would imagine it's within that. So as far as proving systemic racism goes, this is actually one of the studies that is less convincing and less persuasive. Having said that, there are other studies that we've covered in the past which point to the same theme, and the numbers hammer it home much more. So, for example, we covered in the past the resume study. Now, this is similar to the resume study, but there was a different one that was done not too long ago, which found, again, that if you have a black-sounding name versus a white-sounding name, that it was about a 50% difference. So you get 50% more callbacks if you have a white-sounding name, all the credentials being exactly the same. Okay, when we get away from a 4% number and we move towards a 50% number, then you start to realize, okay, yeah, that is systemic racism, and there's a problem here. Now, again, I don't think it's like It's not necessarily nefarious on the part of the people who are doing the wrong thing, but unfortunately they have imprinted in their minds on some level this discriminatory attitude. Now, again, I think that sounds almost a little too harsh because it's not on purpose. It's just that they've bought into certain things about society and certain concepts have been so pervasive that they view it in their minds as like an of course thing. Like, well, I mean, if you have one white person and one black person, same credentials, the white person, you know what I'm saying? And again, it's not nefarious. It's just these are – it's like an internal dialogue where they don't view themselves as doing something wrong or evil or bad, and it's just they're acting what in a way that they think is natural, and these implicit assumptions come out. Another example is the bicycle study. You remember that? So I forget who did it. I think it was ABC News or something like that. They chained up a bicycle. When a white girl was having trouble unchaining the bicycle, everybody just assumed, number one, it's her bike. And number two, she's hot. I want to hit on her. So guys would go up, do you need help with this? Now, when it's not a white girl who does it, but rather a white guy, they get the neutral approach. So people just walk by. Whatever. Some dude fucking with a bike chain is what it is. Guess he's trying to get his bike off. When a black guy does it, you ready for this? Everybody looks at him suspiciously, and they think he's stealing it. You know what it is? It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. It becomes a vicious cycle. So some people would argue, specifically conservatives and idiots would argue, well, I commit more crime anyway, man. Black people commit more crime, so it makes sense to look at them like that. Even if that's true, number one, there would be sociological reasons for that. And number two, that still, overall, the overwhelming majority of black people aren't criminals. So when you look at a black person trying to unchain a bike and you immediately think, criminal, that means you are making assumptions. You are basing that reaction off of stereotypes, whether or not you realize it. You are racist in that scenario. It's not as in your face as Bull Connor with the fucking fire hose and sicking dogs on black people in the South. But it's there. There is something there. It's a much lower level of racism, but there are implicit assumptions here that you're working with. So that's what happened in that study. Then there was another one, the eBay study, again, about 50% difference in sales when you have the same product, one white hand holding it, one black hand holding it, same price. The overwhelming majority of people go to the white hand. Implicit assumptions we're dealing with here. And then naturally there's the drug arrest four times more often for black people, even though white people and black people use drugs at a similar rate. Or my personal favorite, white people sell drugs more than black people, but black people get arrested more for selling drugs. So in other words, it's hard out there, man. It is true. There's no question about it that there is still systemic racism in place. There is still, on some level, there's a mental aspect to this and a cultural aspect to this. It doesn't mean you're a bad person if you have these implicit assumptions. It just means you should be aware of it and avoid it. Now, when some people hear me make these arguments too, by the way, they then assume that, like, oh my God, means that Kyle agrees with, you know, all the claims of racism that have ever been made, and he agrees with everything Black Lives Matter has ever done, et cetera, et cetera. That's not true. Don't put words in my mouth. Don't put thoughts in my head. I evaluate everything on a case-by-case basis. As I told you, when the Black Lives Matter protesters, interrupted Bernie Sanders, I was 100% on the side of Bernie Sanders because that was unnecessary and it didn't make sense. I've heard arguments in favor of racism that I thought were not true. Okay, so let's keep everything in perspective here. But the bottom line is, when it comes to the core claim, the fundamental claim here, of people in the Black Lives Matter movement who are concerned about racism and of others who are concerned about racism, I think they're right. I think there's still battles to be won, and this idea of white privilege existing is not wholly made up and solely to shame white people and make them feel like you have to apologize for being white. No, that's the defensive reaction. That's the, oh my God, my feels are up. I can't believe you're attacking me. They're not attacking you. They're pointing at a problem and hoping that everybody can get in on fixing it and making it better. So let's not, you know, get overly emotional here, and let's not get crazy in our response. Let's face the facts and move forward in a productive way, because there is still a problem that needs to be addressed and we should be addressing it. Okay. Next. Evangelical pastor Jonathan Shuttlesworth gave a ridiculous sermon where he's going to mention Robin Williams. Let's watch.
I hope you can tell looking in these blue eyes that I'm not here for fun. I'm not here because I try to book 50 places a year to preach so I can make a living. I'm here because your soul matters. Jesus said in Mark chapter 8, verses 36 and 37, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul in the process? When you see Robin Williams hanging, that lets you know that no matter how much success you have, it is not a substitute for Jesus living in your heart. When you see rich people that can't keep their lives together, kids are in, you must have Jesus living in your heart. And then after Jesus comes into your heart and cleans up all the mess and gives you a brand new heart, then you must lift your hands and receive the most wonderful gift God ever gave to the church. The greatest gift God gave to the world is Jesus. But the greatest gift God gave to the church is the baptism of the Holy Ghost and fire.
First of all, why the fuck are you crying? What is this? I mean, you're either putting on an act, which is fucked up, or you're a crazy person. There's no other takeaway. The greatest gift was the Holy Ghost given birth to him with the baptism. Religious stuff. Why are you crying? That's not a time to cry. What you're saying doesn't even make sense. It's just words. It's just loose religious terms you're slapping together in a sentence, and you're saying as you cry to make people go, oh, he cares so deeply about this here. This is why I'm opposed to fundamentalist religion. They make shit up. The whole point of it is making shit up. He just said, oh, Robin Williams, you know, all the fame and celebrity and all that stuff, all the money and success, couldn't fill that, you know, that void that Jesus needs to fill. Ah! Okay. Stop taking your fucking religious pet issue and attaching it to shit that has nothing to fucking do with it. Again, you're making it up. It's all in your head. Now, you want to know the reality about Robin Williams? Now, of course, he was dealing with, at certain points in his life, depression issues, addiction issues, and stuff like that. But this came out recently. Quote, according to his official autopsy, actor and comedian Robin Williams had a disease called Lewy body dementia, which may have contributed to his decision to kill himself. People with LBD have dementia and often appear disoriented. According to ABC News, Williams had displayed odd behavior in his final days. Notably, he kept several watches in a sock and was, quote, concerned about keeping the watches safe. The dementia usually leads to significant cognitive impairment that interferes with everyday life. Now, again, we don't know. That could be one of many factors that led to the event finally happening. But the bottom line is, it's complicated. It's messy. There's a mix of things that go into it. And for you to take your pet religious issue and your backwards-ass ideology and just try to attach it to it, to make a point to your mindless followers who will clap like seals, you're exploiting the situation. And again, you're exploiting it, and you're doing that while you make shit up about stuff that is not true. So do me a favor. Take your passion and your over-the-top, you know, portrayal and show that you're putting on and shove it up your fucking ass. Because you know what? You know who are the only people that it makes sense for them to be passionate? People who are saying things that are true. People who are saying things where it makes sense, where there are facts, where you're actually getting somewhere and you're solving a problem and you're doing something enlightening. What you are doing is the opposite of that. You're taking your own personal opinion, you're taking your own fundamentalist ideology, and you're vomiting it all up over somebody who was beloved by millions, Robin Williams. So enough with making shit up, enough with your act. Most of the rational world looks at you and goes, that's okay. Move along. You know, what are you doing here? You're a fucking charlatan. You're a joke. And bottom line is, if you're going to spew your bullshit, number one, you shouldn't. But if you do, at least stop attaching it to people who have nothing to fucking do with it.
All right, next. Prosperity gospel preacher Creflo Dollar is going to defend the recent controversy where he asked his followers for $65 million for a private jet. And naturally, his response here is beyond tone deaf.
You are about to do some miraculous, wonderful, outstanding things in your life. The devil ain't going to know if it's you or Jesus. Hallelujah. See, don't get upset when the world says stuff and talk about stuff and all that. They're just looking through the wrong lens. They don't understand. Why does a preacher need with an airplane? They don't know. They'll never know because they're not looking through the Word. They will never know. They'll never know. But I don't believe you can just be healed without medicine. They won't know because they're looking through the wrong lens. They'll never know. Well, why would you stay with a woman or a man that you don't like no more? They'll never know and all that. They're just looking through the wrong lens. They don't understand.
Repeat it, no
why
problem.
Why does a preacher need with an airplane? They don't know. They'll never know because they're not looking through the Word. They will never know. They'll never know. But I don't believe you can just be healed without medicine. They won't know because they're looking through the wrong lens. They'll never know. Well, why would you stay with a woman or a man that you don't like no more? They'll never know. Some Christians don't even know.
Has anybody ever been wrong about more things in such a short time span? He's like, well, obviously, you stay in a marriage even if you fucking hate each other. Really, Creflo? How far does that go? What if they try to commit a crime against you? What if they try to hurt you? What if they're abusing you? Would you give that advice to women who are victims of domestic violence? How about if they're verbally abusive and they're alcoholics, one of the two in the marriage? How about, again, I mean, you kind of already answered this question, but if you just fucking hate each other and you're both miserable together, you would advocate, stay miserable, stay together because I say so. Who are you? Why the fuck do you have the right to tell them what they should or should not do with their own lives? And if you're getting in the way of their happiness, wouldn't that make you a bad person? Wouldn't that make your response the one where you're admittedly saying, stay miserable? I mean, that kind of advice is beyond ridiculous. And then notice, he mentioned, oh, they don't see it in the Word. That means the Bible. So you're saying, well, we got to follow the Bible on these things. That's the bottom line. Well, what else is in the Bible? There's a story in the Bible where daughters get their father drunk and rape their father so that they can have their dad's baby. Hashtag biblical values. There's parts of the Bible where guys chop off their special parts and then live lives of celibacy. Is that what you want to do? I mean, you can do that if you want to do that. But here are your biblical values. Polygamy's in the Bible. Do you even know that? And then he's like, well, I can't believe people don't believe that we can heal you without medicine. Because you can't! You can't! You made it up! You made it up! There's no evidence that you can do that because you can't do that. And now, by the way, what you're saying is dangerous. Because if anybody foregoes treatment for cancer or something like that because they want to listen to your dumbass recite Bible verses, you have blood on your hands. And then finally he's like, well, they don't get it, man. I need my airplane, dude. I need my $65 million private jet. And they just don't get it because they don't read the Bible. Where in the Bible does it say that your much poorer followers should give you $65 million so you can go in a private jet all around the world, do whatever the fuck you want? Where does it say that in the Bible? No, what it says in the Bible is the rich can't even get into heaven. They can't even get into heaven. Do you know the story of Lazarus? Lazarus was rich on earth. When he got to heaven, he said, it wasn't that good enough, why don't you let me into heaven? And God says, no, you had your time on earth, you had your material well-being there, that was your heaven. Now you go to hell. If you were a rich person, by definition, you go to hell. This is in the Bible, but you don't know it, or you do know it, and you don't care about it, and you reject it, because it doesn't fit what your preconceived notions are. So at least be honest that you're talking more about what your opinions are, and you don't have God backing you up. God is not on your side. You're just pretending he's on your side. And by the way, you're wrong. This is an old trick that people use. When you can't win in a logical debate, a logical discussion with the other side, you just go, well, God's on my side. So that's the end of the discussion. I win, you lose. No, it's the exact opposite. You're admitting to everybody that has a functioning brain that you indeed lose and you can't stand toe-to-toe with us because you know we'll crush you. All right, guys, out of time. Love you. Peace.